Okay, here we go. Parash B'Shalach, we have the Shira Sayam, Shira Sivoya, and we have Shabbos. We spoke about this week. Ru'u ki Hashem nosan lachem es haShabbos. There's a special term, it's called Shabbos Shira. Some have the minute to distribute breadcrumbs to the birds. Some distribute kernels of wheat. Some distribute kernels of barley.
Did you see this thing that
I have a feeling that was photoshopped. Today, you cannot believe anything you see. I have a feeling that that mail you sent out, that image on the WhatsApp, on the chat, with breadcrumbs, with a label on it, I think that label was photoshopped. Look at the label very carefully.
Yeah, but it's in the store. It's a different
photo label. No, I don't think it's in the store.
If they sell a salt water for Pesach, why should they sell crumbs?
I don't think people would buy it.
Chalent
for the birds.
The birds, I mean,
bird seed.
They didn't go for it.
That's the good one. They couldn't fly out.
So I had a Litvish friend who didn't want to put it out on Shabbos.
Yeah.
And there have to be a snow. So
halachic issues putting out on Shabbos.
They wrote the word Shabbos Shira with the breadcrumbs on the snow.
They want to tell the birds that Shabbos Shira, come take it. The birds should know that it's Shabbos Shira, they should have instructions. The breadcrumbs come with instructions to the birds. All right, let's get to something serious. Okay? I want to talk about something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, but I want to discuss it in an entirely different light. Completely different light. All the way, mamash mikatsa lakatsa. Parsha begins, Vayi b'shalach paroi esa'am v'loi nacham alukim derech eretz lishtim. Right away Hashem tells us the coordination, the GPS coordinates, where ways. We have ways, right, in the beginning of the parasha. Paro, Vayi b'shalach paroi esa'am, so where are we going? We're going to Eretz Yisrael. So what do you do when you go on a trip? You take a smartphone, you go open up the app Waze, and you say, where are you going? And you type in where you want to go. We want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So the computer right away connects with the satellites, and with wherever the service is located, and it plots a course for you. It looks at the traffic, looks at the roads, and it makes a decision. You want to go with the tolls, without the tolls, traffic, there's a lot of incredible technology available today in order to get to your destination in record time. So Hashem is controlling the system. And there's an easy way to go, it'll take a couple of days, and then there's a long way to go, a roundabout way, a much longer way to go. And the pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hacked into the system, and he decided the way we're going to go is Lo'nachem Elokim Derech Eretz Pelishtim. Hashem decided we're not going to go the easy way, the Derech of the land of Pelishtim, but instead, why? He called it for, it's too near. Why? So what's wrong? Adarabah, if we can go the short way, what's the problem? You know what the problem is? Ki Amar Elokim, Hashem said, Pen Yinochem Am, the people are going to regret. They're going to have a change of heart, Bir Oysam Milchama, and what are they going to do then? Vishavu Mitzrayma, and they're going to go back to Egypt. Rashi explains, what's going to happen here? What Milchama? So Rashi says, well, we know they had a lot of Milchamas. The Amalek came to visit them on their journey. The Kanani, Vayetza Amahamaleki, Via Kanani. We learned there were battles. In the desert, the Jews were attacked. And they had battles. We learned in last week's parasha, Devachamushim Olu Vinei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. They came out of Egypt with weapons. Weapons in order, it was a dangerous situation. Okay, fine. And Rashi goes on to say, in a roundabout way, they said exactly those words, let's go back to Egypt. If Hashem would have taken them in a short, easy way, how much more so would they have wanted to go back, have a change of heart, and go back to Mitzrayim? So therefore, what was the solution? Hashem took them in a long, roundabout way. And even when they came into a situation where there was the danger and they had regrets, it's just not practical anymore to go back to Egypt. There's just no way we can even get there because we're already so far deep into on our journey that it's just not possible. So it was insurance. Instead of going the short way, when they would have some difficulty, they would just make an about face. Hashem took them in a long about way. When they had a difficulty, to make an about face just would not be practical. That's what it says over here in the words of this pasuk. This is the first pasuk here in Parashas B'Shalach. Now, question. Think about it. Really? Really? You want to go back to Egypt? You were just in Egypt. The Egyptians literally tortured you to death. You went into the fields. You had to gather straw in intense heat. Egypt was not a very... they don't have much air conditioning, climate-friendly country, and there's sand and there's this. The Egyptians took advantage of you. They tortured you to death. If you did not provide enough bricks, they would take the infants and use them as a punishment, use the infants as bricks. So what are you talking about? You really want to go back? Really? And, yeah?
I think if they would open up the prisons today,
I think a lot of people
would prefer to stay.
It's a prisoner mentality. It's a psychological.
They just, released, I think, half of the prisoners, anyone who's been sitting there a long time. That's the what's called First Aid Act by Rabbi Moshe Morgenstern, the Siddish guy from Williamsburg.
Yeah, well, they'll be back.
So they implemented anyone who's been sitting there a period of time or is over 50 can go to home arrest instead of having to sit in jail.
Yeah, but that's not relevant.
All right, but whatever it was, let's go further. First, there's another thing. Besides the fact that you're saying psychologically we want to go back and be slaves. Okay, there's such a idea.
You have no responsibility, you know.
All right. Okay, I hear what you're saying. But okay, there's an argument to be made. There's nothing like freedom. There is an argument to be made that freedom is. Bottom line is, once you get a taste of freedom for real, freedom is freedom.
Okay.
Well, let me give you a little more.
Then really, at that point.
Okay, then there's another argument. Another.
Americans are willing to give it up.
No, but...
Okay, let's...
They miscalculated 30 years...
Right, 30 years... Okay, that was that. Shevet Ephraim, they left 30 years too early and they died. Okay, they're supposed to present basic ideas. There's another thing is, the Jews just destroyed Egypt. There was nothing left in Egypt. They killed them all. The 10 Makos wiped them out. Makas Bechoros did the damage. They certainly hated the Jews a lot more now. And the Jews were responsible. Moshe Rabbeinu, the 10 Makos obliterated Egypt, and there was certainly a very great danger for Klal Yisrael to go back after they wiped them out with the 10 Makos. So you could really, if you think about it, you know, we're so used to just reading the circle, we don't think about it, but if you really think about it, really? Really? The Jews really want to go back to the Fashtunkina prison camps, the labor camps, they were mamish concentration camps. Mm-hmm. Really? And now, especially after the 10 Makos, we Klal Yisrael wiped them all out. Yeah. There's nothing even left. Like, they took all their money, everything.
Yeah,
you're going to go back, they're going to kill you even more.
Didn't survivors try to return?
The what?
Didn't survivors try to
return? Find the family. Basically, was to find the family, not to stay.
What do you mean, survivors?
After World War II.
Yeah, they returned to their homes to find.
And what happened?
How crazy.
And what happened? They were all killed.
They were killed.
But to think they could actually go back.
Go back. All right, so I'm just throwing out a question, which you have to appreciate that this statement here in the pasuk is a very difficult statement. You're going to have to really work hard you just can't take this pasuk for granted. What did Hashem say? Pen yinochei ma'am b'roisam milchama v'shavu mitzroima. Really? Maybe you're right. Maybe you'll tell me there is such a psychological slave mentality that's part of you, and you want to go back for more beating. You want to go back and be punished more. A sucker for punishment. The whole Klal Yisrael are suckers for punishment. And the situation... And the situation now is so much more difficult. So you'll tell me, yeah, that's what the pasuk means. If that's what it means, I accept. But is that really what it means? Maybe there's another mahalach. Maybe there's another approach that we can give an opportunity to look at it from a different angle. And the key to see a different approach is to go back to, again, what we spoke about in Parashat Shemos. In Parashat Shemos, Paro wakes up one day, new policy, new mandate. A new mandate in the country. What's the new mandate, the new Mishagas of the day? Any male boy that's born has to be killed. Wonderful. This is for the benefit of the country. Because our astrologers, my chief astrologer of the country, who gets a nice pension, a nice salary, he has told me that in the stars it says a person is going to be born today that's going to destroy the whole country. Mandate. Mandate, this is the law. The law, why? What's the problem? So Paro, he goes on camera and he tells the world, I'll tell you why. Because what's going to happen? The Jews are getting too numerous. And there'll be a war. The day is going to come where there's going to be a declaration of war. Some country in the world, some country that you never heard of on the other side of the hemisphere, they're going to come, they're going to declare war, right? We'll get some signals from some aliens from another planet that want to declare war with us. And the Jewish people that are numerous, they're going to join them. So our enemy from Mars will fight from without, from the outside, and they'll fight from within, and the day is going to come, violinu min aretz, and the Jews are going to vote us out. They're going to vote us out, and they're going to destroy this country that we spent centuries building and developing, and these wackos are going to just destroy the whole country. Wow, a pretty interesting mandate. Wipe out every Jewish male, Kolabena Yiloid, tells the Mialdois what to do because of this.
Did you mention too much snowstorm?
What?
Snowstorm.
Okay. So this is what he says. We're afraid now that there's going to be a Muhammad, and the Muhammad, I don't know what Muhammad you're talking about. What Muhammad, who's your enemy over here? Who's coming to fight with you over here? Egypt was the world power. Who are you afraid of? And the Jews are too numerous. They're going to join with them. And then one day, all the citizens of the natives of Egypt are going to have to leave the country because these slaves, these people, are going to take over. You know, it's a little far-fetched. And we actually discussed that. So I want to explain that the milchama, the hayaki serena milchama of Parshas Shemos, is the same milchama of Parshas Beshalach. There's a milchama in Parshas Shemos. V'hayaki sikrena milchama. In Parshas Beshalach. V'ayhi beshalach paro yasev v'loi nochem v'lukim derech eretz plishtim. Ki amaro them. Pen yinochemam b'roysam milchama. There's a milchama in Shemos. A milchama in Beshalach. It's the same milchama. What do I mean the same milchama? Put the two together. If you put the two together, things begin to make sense. Paro was a very wise man. I'm suggesting. He was a chacham. And Paro, he saw he has slaves. He had a lot of slaves. He had a whole country full of Jewish slaves. He had a country full of Jewish slaves. And Paro is a student of the human condition. And Paro knows slaves eventually go free. Slaves, they unionize, they come together, they rebel. That's the world history. It's always like that.
Really?
Study history. Slaves eventually rise up. They rise up and they make demands. They have sympathy. Study world history. Look at America. And they take over the country. Okay? Look at this country. Today I know someone they wanted to go get the vaccine. They were told the government has decided no more. Unless you're from a very selective minority group, then maybe we'll make arrangements for you. But otherwise, if you're a white male, forget it. The government, the federal government, no longer has provided us with the medication that we need to save your life, to help you. No more. That's the way it goes. Unless you're a minority. What do you mean minority? Minorities, these minorities, where does this come from? What's going on over here? It's the human condition that slaves are fed up being abused and suffering, and they rise up and they rebel and they escape and they take over, they come back to take revenge. Paro knows that. Pyro is planning his legacy. He sees that there is a group of slaves. There's a group of slaves that are now becoming very strong and powerful, especially the Jewish people. They were very stubborn and very tough. It's not just, you know, these are smart people. And what's going to happen? They're going to leave. They're going to pick themselves up and leave the country. They know what's going to happen? The Jewish people, they're going to go into new territory. No one likes when someone, where are they going to go? Where are you going to go? You're going to leave this country. Where are you going to settle? You're going to want to take over another country. Hostile takeover. You'll go into the land of Canaan. You go into the land of Moab. You go into the land of Midian. Who knows? These Jews, they're going to leave this country because they're sick and tired of the way they're being treated. They're going to leave the country. They got to go somewhere. Where are they going to live? In the desert? They're not going to live in the desert. They're going to go a little look for some place where they can live. And they're going to make milchama. They're going to declare war on where they want to live. And then they're going to say, make the following thing. They're going to say, you know, why do we go instead of making milchama with another country? We have a commodity that they don't have. We know all the secrets of Egypt. We built the palaces. We built the storage facilities. We know where all the skeletons are buried. We have all of the intelligence. So instead of us going and fighting with another country, let's pool our resources. We'll provide the intelligence. You will provide the weapons of mass destruction. And together, we are both enemies of Egypt. We'll go back to Egypt and destroy the whole Egypt. And we'll take over. So in other words, when you learn Parashat Shemot very simply, one day we're going to get a knock on the door that some foreign nation wants to go to war against Egypt. And then the Jews are going to join from within, and there's going to be chaos. And the end is going to be wicked. That's very far-fetched. What's much more likely is the Jews are going to pick themselves up, rebel against us, and they're going to leave. They're going to leave this country. They're going to go to another country, and they're going to declare war on another country, because where else are they going to go? No one likes the Jews. And they'll say, listen, don't kill us. Let's not have war. Let us, you have the example with Midian and Moab. Chazal say they hated each other. There was a world war going on between them for generations. But now they are a common enemy. My enemy's enemy is my friend. They're a common enemy, the Jewish people. So all of a sudden, Midian and Moab, oh, they're best friends. Why? Because together they'll go and they'll fight against the Jewish people. So the Jews will do the same thing. They'll go and they'll pool their resources with another country. And then they'll come back v'shavu mitzrayma with another nation and wipe out the whole Egypt. So look how you read the psukim. The parasha Shmo says, the pyro says, v'hoya ki sikren milchama. What milchama? The Jews are going to escape. And the Jews are going to have a milchama. V'noisav, instead of the Jews fighting with their enemies, v'noisav gam hu al soineinu, and together they'll both come back, v'nilcham banu, and v'olinu min aretz, and will be removed, because the Jews are going to pool their resources, their intelligence of what they know goes on in this country, with our other enemies from the outside that would never even cholmzach to go fight with us. But now that the Jews have escaped, and the Jews bring with them all the information that they need, what we need. So now they'll take advantage. Parashas B'shalach, what's going to be? B'shach Parasam. We want to go back to Egypt to be slaves again. No, we don't. Who do we want to go back to be a slave again? We're going to go back. They're going to go out into the desert, and then they're going to come across Amalek and the Canaanim and this Meshuggah nation and that, and they're going to declare war. So the Jews say, why should we go fight with them? Why don't we make them an offer they can't refuse? Instead of fight with us, and we'll both lose soldiers for nothing, why don't we go together and become buddy-buddy, and we'll together go back to Egypt and overthrow the whole country? And we'll have a good life in Egypt. When they see that they're under attack, they will then go make peace with the enemy that they're calling Muhammad. What is the offer of peace? together let us go back to destroy Egypt. Not to go back to the Egypt to be a slave in Egypt, but to destroy the country. So it's a pretty good idea. So why didn't Hashem want? What's so terrible then? What would be so terrible? You know what so terrible is? Because then when you would take out a history book today and you would read about Paro, Paro says to his advisors, you know, one day he wakes up and he issues a mandate. And he says, the Jews are too numerous. We have to kill them all. You know what they're going to say? There'll be a footnote in the history. He was right. He was right. In history, Paro will go down in history and saying, it may at that time have seemed that he was committing genocide. Because, genocide. But you see, he was right. Because that's exactly what happened. Exactly what he predicted came upon him. Exactly. They became numerous. They escaped. They met up with their own enemy. They decided to, instead of fight, to make peace. And what was the reason? So they can go back together with the intelligence of the Jews, who knew all the secrets, and the military power of the other nation. They go back and they wiped out the whole Egypt. So it was a war. It was a good idea. It was a necessary evil to commit genocide in order to save the country. He was right. Hashem said, you can't save it. A crime is a crime. Murder is murder. Genocide is genocide. There's no excuses. There's no excuse for murder. No excuse for genocide. And therefore, this cannot be. I don't want anyone to say Paro was right. What do we find this in a similar idea with Avraham Avinu and the Melech Sedom? I don't want to take from you mikimichut the atzeroich now v'loy soymar that the Melech Sedom made Avraham rich. No one should ever say that. V'hi yisem nikiyim me Hashem umi Yisrael v'lo yoyna. No one should dare say this. Leman Shemoi, part of the Yitzias Mitzrayim, you find this in Nevi'im, is it's not only about us. It's not, you have it many, many times in Nevi'im. We learn in Nevi'im, Yishayim, Yecheskel, Yirmiyah. It's not only about us. It's about Hashem. Leman Shemoi. Hashem's glory. Hashem made this world. Built into this world, Hashem's glory has to be maintained. No one should say Paro was right. And therefore, we had to travel in the desert we didn't have to travel for 40 years, that was because of the Chedor Egel. But we had to go in a roundabout way in order, it shouldn't be a Chil Hashem. It should not possibly lead to a Chil Hashem. The whole Jewish people, 3 million people, there were 600,000 men above the age of 20, which translates into approximately 3 million Jews, had to go matriach, enormous exertion, enormous sacrifice, in order to preserve the reputation of Hashem. A person's reputation counts. Hashem's reputation counts. No one should one day come along and say, Paro was right. Paro was not right. Paro was a mass murderer, a demented murderer, nothing more than that. A murderer, a bloodthirsty murderer. He slaughtered children every day to bathe in their blood. Okay, Kolaben. No one should say, yeah, you have to look at the big picture. The big picture, what's going to be, what's going to possibly, maybe. There's no scientific proof this is going to happen. There's no scientific proof it's going to happen. Maybe the Jews will escape and they'll find an enemy. And they'll make peace. They'll come back and take us out of the country. How do you know that's going to happen? How do you know? Did it happen? And was it didn't happen? It didn't happen. How do you know? Who knows? And therefore, we have to go to extreme measures, and we have to murder an entire race. An entire race has to be wiped off the face of the map because maybe. And you're going to see I'm right, and therefore, You can do outrageous things in this world, commit outrageous, outrageous crimes, all for the greater good. That's a very, very dangerous path to go down. I'm not saying that there are times when people, you know, doctors and lawyers and politicians have to make very painful decisions. Okay, obviously every single situation has to be taken, every single situation is unique, but this is outright murder. And the Klal Yisrael had to work with this principle. And it's a Musar Haskel to us. Don't always be so smart. Don't always, you have to be smart. Ezeu chacham horoye es hanoylad. No one's coming to deny that fact. Ezeu chacham, but be very careful. Sometimes looking too much into the future leads to things that are totally, totally ridiculous and out of order. All right, let's go to another idea. Another idea I want to mention here is Klal Yisrael this week's parasha complained three times. There are three major complaints presented in the parasha. The first complaint is when they're being chased after the Egyptians. They left Egypt. They left Egypt, and all of a sudden they turn around, and they look, they open up their eyes, and who's behind them? They see that they're from behind, the Egyptians are chasing after them. And then they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, what did you do to us? Hamibli yein kvadim b'mitzrayim lekachtanu lamus b'midbar. Well, there are no cemeteries in Egypt. We have to go die here in Egypt. There are not enough cemeteries. And then they go on to say, ki toiv lanu avoid es mitzrayim. It would have been better for us to be slaves to Mitzrayim min musenu b'midbar rather than die in the desert. That's the first thing that they say. Then there's a second complaint. What was the second time they complained? Well, they did not have what to eat. And there, then they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lu Mosnu. It would have been, Lu, if only we would have died in Egypt rather than come here into the desert and die. This pasuk was by the second complaint, by the man or by the water? By the water, right? This by the water. Now remember, yeah. let me just make sure I'm saying this correctly.
I thought there were four. Is there two by the water?
Why? There were four? What was the four? I think there were three in this parasha. Let's first read out over here when they're pursuing this. Let me get the pasuk correctly. The first time it says, Haloi zadav asher dibarnu lachem mitzrayim, achadal menu v'navdol asher mitzrayim, ki toiv lanu avodes mitzrayim. Mimuseinu Balimbar. This is the second. What am I saying over here? Let me stop and start again. The first time they complained is when the Egyptians were chasing after. Vayirdufu Mitzrayim. They complained. Hamivli and Kavanim Mitzrayim lachtun lamus b'midbar. Are there not enough graves? Chadal mimenu v'navdas Mitzrayim. And here are the keywords I want to focus on. Ki toiv lanu avodes Mitzrayim imusenu b'aminbar. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Okay. Kriyas Yamsuf happens. Everything is good. We go past Kriyas Yamsuf, and now they come to Mara. Vayavoy Elima v'sham shtem eshrimayim. Vayisim Elim, they come to Midbar Sin. And they vayiloinu. They complain. What do they complain about? Bread. There's no food. There's no bread. They complain. And the terms they use over here is mi yitain. If only Musainu we would have died, V'yad Hashem be Eretz Mitzrayim. If only it would have been. Now we go further. They get the man. Everything is fine and good. They get what they want. Hashem gives them the man. And then we come to the third complaint. Perek Yitzayin. V'yisu kol adas v'nei shol mimi bar sin l'maseyem v'al pi Hashem v'yachnu b'refidim v'ein mayim l'shto yisoham. And what do? They complain again. And the people go on, they complain. and they say, Vayoymer, Lomoze, Heli Sanu Mimitraim Luhomisoi CVS Bonavies Miknai Bat Soma. Why? Why did you do this? Only three times. Okay, Mr. Elman, I think only three times in this parasha.
There's another word right at the end.
Where?
Right before Amalek comes. But they don't,
Vayas
Yeshua. Because they complained against Moshe and Aaron, not that they complained about going back.
We have another, where's there more water? Where's the next complaint?
17, chapter 17.
Right, that's what I'm talking about right now. It's number three. Vayitzmosh, only the third time. There are only three complaints in the parasha. As far as I think, there are only three complaints. Vayitzmosh.
The water went through the stick
in. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about right now. Pasuk 3. Vayitzmosh sham ha'am lemayim. Pasuk gimel. 17:3. Vayolin ha'am al Moshe. Vayolin ha'am vayomer. From 17:1 to 7, this section is the third complaint.
He's talking about Moro, where it was bitter, they couldn't drink from it. That's what he
said. It doesn't say they complained. It doesn't say there was any complaint. You go back to Moro. It says Vayasa Moshe Shom Yam Vayitzol Mevar Shom Vayelchus Shom Yemem Vloy Motzu Moim Vayevam Rasa Vayelchul Mayim Lishos Mayim Imor Kimar Meim Alkein Gashom Moro Vayiloinu Oh, it says you're right there, Manish there, okay, Manish, what are we going to drink? But it doesn't say there, okay, you're right, you are correct. But the point, there's the difference though. There, it does say Manish there. What are we going to drink?
Didn't just have Vayelinu?
It doesn't say vayiloinu, but it doesn't say it doesn't. Their complaint is not eloquent. Their complaint is just they complained. Okay, they just complain manishteh. Okay, you are correct, Mr. Elman, unbelievable. You're on the mark. There are four complaints in the parasha. I'm choosing now to ignore the first one. Not that I need to ignore that. It's you can make it part of the var. There are four complaints. You are correct, manishteh. But all it says over here is they complained and they said, what are we going to drink? Okay, then the next three times, they didn't just complain. Their complaint was expressed eloquently. Okay? There was an expression in their complaint. What was the first complaint? The first complaint was, Ki toiv lanu. It would have been better, Ki toiv lanu, had we remained as slaves in the desert. That was the complaint before when the Egyptians were pursuing them in the beginning of the parasha. When the Egyptians were pursuing the Jewish people before Kriyas Yamsuf, they said to Moshe, look, we're going to die now. They have overtaken us. We're going to die. And they said, Ki toiv lanu. It would have been better for us to die in Egypt than to die here as martyrs here by the Egyptians. There was an eloquence to their complaint. They had an expression. The second time they expressed themselves, even though we're going to skip over the manishta, is where they won bread. And there they said, the words in that pasuk were, I skip over here 1 second, I went too far, there, let's clarify this. Vayiloinu kol adas mei yishol Moshe v'Aaron vayom v'olem bo yishol mi yitain musenu v'yad Hashem. Mi yitain. If only it would have been that we would have died in Egypt. The third time their words were, when at the end of the parasha, by the water, lomazeh hel yisanu mi'eretz Mitzrayim. So we're going from, in the different expressions, besides the fact that they complained, but the three complaints we have, which the first complaint is toiv lanu, the second complaint was mi yitain, and the third complaint was lomazeh. These are different.
All three mention Mitzrayim.
Right, they all mention Mitzrayim. So my question is, why have the Jewish people become so eloquent and articulate in their complaints? What happened over here? Why is it that they don't use the same boring words each time and just say the same thing three times? Each time they have a complaint, you take out your script, your cards, and you'll say, Toiv lanu, Museinu Bamidbar, it would have been better for us. This, then the second time, we'll say all three times, Mi Yitei Museinu Bamidbaris Mitzrayim. And the third time, they would say three times, Lama Zeh, why have you done this? So I want to suggest, because this is the nature of a complainer. A complainer develops. First he gets the undergrad degree, then he gets his doctorate, and then he gets the Nobel Prize. Okay, there are madrigos in complaining. There's a maturity in complaining. You don't just become a five-star complainer overnight. It takes practice. It takes practice. Ask your wives. It takes practice to become a complainer. And there's a psychology behind it. The first time they complained, notice, they gave Hashem some slack. They didn't actually say to Hashem, direct it. It was more of a rational complaint. It was, they were sitting back in their rocking chair, and they said, Toivlan, in the final analysis, like writing an editorial, It would have been better had we remained in Egypt. I have no complaints, Hashem. I love you. I believe in you. I have a faith in you. But, you know, Hashem, it would have been better for us. The complaint is much more idle. Don't make any mistake about it. It's a complaint. It is a lack of faith for which we've been held accountable for generations. But look at the complaint. Toivlan. In the final analysis, when history is all over, it would have been better had we not done this. What could we do? We took bad advice, we left Egypt. It is what it is. We'll deal with the situation that we got. And that's life. That's life. The second time, they're not so nice. The second time, me eating. Oh. If only it would have been. It's no longer rational. It's now emotional. You've already crossed the barrier. Me eating is an emotional plea. If only we could go back to Egypt. That's a much deeper complaint. That hurts. When you talk like that to Hashem, you really going over the line a lot. The third time is outright nasty. Lama zeh, we're calling a commission, a congressional commission, to be televised globally. We want answers. You're on trial, Hashem. Ribbono shel Olam, you're on trial. Lama zeh helisanu mimitzrayim. We want accountability from you, Hashem. You're guilty. Lama zeh. This is the nature of a complainer. You grow, you develop. You develop in your complaints. You start off, everything is fine. Baruch Hashem, this is what Hashem gave me. I'm grateful for what I have. But when the final book on history is written, Toiv lanu, it would have been better. Then, Mi Yitein. If only you can be like this, and then to become outright nasty. Lama, I want answers. I want accountability. I want punishment. I want there to be actions taken for what has happened. If a person, all of these complaints were dead wrong. I mean, there are things to complain about in life that you're 100% correct. Okay, someone's been a victim of a crime. Someone's been the victim of an injustice, of course, then you have the right. Of course, the God-given right to demand answers for criminal activity. But not when it comes to Hashem. Hashem, you have no right to talk like this. Not the beginning, not the end. And if a person doesn't nip it in the bud,
In a certain way, when a person complains to Hashem, isn't that really a shvach to Hashem? Because you realize...
Yeah, it is. It is.
You understand it, not...
It's a shvach to Hashem. Hashem, you're the one who's doing it. You're venting your frustration, but if the Torah is coming to present it, it's obviously that there's a way to do everything. There are different ways to complain. we don't complain. I don't know, we complain. We're not supposed to complain, but Chazal gave us the Nusach HaTfilah. Every Nusach, you can say that every bracha you make in Shemona Esrei is a complaint. Why didn't you give me food? Why didn't you give me, No, the way you express yourself is, I acknowledge that you are the source of all of my needs, and I acknowledge I'm deficient, and I acknowledge that you're the one that can help me. It's just a matter of the way you express yourself. You can take the same situation, and one person can be nasty with demands and entitlements and a horrible attitude, and another person can take the same exact situation and use it as an opportunity to come close to Hashem. It's the way you express it. These complaints here in the Torah are clearly understood not to be good for us. Can you blame us? I mean, you go through all the mafarshim as a person who suffers and he does things that says things that are not nice. Can you blame? Who's to blame anyone? Right? No one's who's to blame. That's not our business. But if the Torah is presenting this, and from the simple understanding of the psukim, this is not to our benefit. It's not this over here was over the line in how we dealt with the situation.
There's one thing I never understood. It says, "Yeah, love Hashem." That means, let's say Khalila, there's a couple that doesn't have children. Khalila, a lot of things that they like Parnassa you do have, you don't have, but either you have children or you don't have children. So I don't understand. How is the person supposed to, now he's very upset, he feels very bad about it. Let's say the way it is. How is he to love Hashem that he doesn't have children? I don't understand that. That's why he's having children, because he wants children. So, what is the right tefillah? I don't understand.
Okay, this is beyond my pay grade. This is yes, yes, very tough questions.
That's exactly what he's supposed to love Hashem for everything he does to you. Now, let's say the way it is. There's certain things you're not happy about. You know, you say to Hashem that you love him, that I don't have children, but you really don't. I mean.
Okay, this is a big, this is over my head. You're asking very tough things over here. You're 100%. I'm certainly not prepared now to even try to analyze what you're saying. But obviously, this is Dvarim Ha'im Din Beruma Shalaylam. You're saying very big things. And, I don't know. Okay, it's a separate question. I just want to focus now on this idea. What we have here, as Mr. Elman corrected me, that there are four complaints here in this week's parasha. One, the Jews do not elaborate. They just say, Vayiloinu manishte. They complained, manishte. Okay, that has to be taken into consideration as well. But I want to go look at the big three. The big three of this parasha in order was first Toivlanu, Miyitain, and Lamazet. And they use different expressions each time. One when the Egyptians were pursuing them, one when they complained about bread, and the other one they complained about water. So you can say whatever you want to go say. You can say there are a lot of different ideas. Obviously, maybe different expressions are more appropriate in the world of the language of complaints for different types of situations. But I just want to focus on this dimension of drush, and that is, there's a succession. These things happened in order. And the order, they get more and more nasty. And the Musa Haskell is that complaining is just like anything else in life. The more you do it, the better you get. Now, when it comes to complaining, a person goes down the path, a slippery slope, of being nasty. So it starts out with being a little nasty. Do it again, you get even more nasty. And then you do it with outright chutzpah. Now, if you're dealing with people who are criminals, listen, that's the way to go. Okay, I'm not coming to dispute that. But when you're dealing with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's not the way to go. And the Musa Haskell is...
Just part of Moshe Rabbeinu said, for no reason. How does that happen just at the end of Shemos? That lotion from Moshe Rabbeinu. Lama Hare Oso Lama Zeh. The same lotion, Lama.
Lama Hare Oso Lama Zeh V'Lama Zehu So Enech Nami. Chazal are very critical of Moshe Rabbeinu. They are critical of him. The Mamorechat of the Bikus, he used those words, Lama Hariyosa, so Hashem used those words against him when Hashem punished him for certain things, going Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, it's a good question. We do find that Moshe was criticized for saying that. number two, that was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu way before this whole thing, the Klal Yisrael. He had a different relationship. He was Hashem's hand-picked leader for Klal Yisrael. Here we're focusing on the people. The relationship and the conversation between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one sugya, and we are on the receiving end, we are the followers. Klal Yisrael, they are on the other end. They're taking orders from Moshe, from Hashem through Moshe. And here, in this week's parasha, they're coming to complain 3/4 times, and we're taking note how the language of their complaints got worse and worse. And the mussar is, when a person has a bad midah, if you don't nip it in the bud, it's only going to get worse and worse and get out of control. A person will go down the slippery slope, and it's not going to be pleasant. Okay, I want to go move on to another idea. Another idea is very interesting, Rashi. Rashi tells the end of the Shira. I want to say something about Jewish that is, you can't really say this without a makar, and I don't really mean to say it. What does that mean, right? I don't really mean to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway to bring out the point that I'm trying to make. And you, in your brilliant minds, will have to somehow figure it out. Okay? That's my hakdama to this vart. It's not a controversial vart. Don't worry, it's not politics. Politics another time, but not in this. We have the Shiras Hayam. Where does the Shiras Hayam end? So it's interesting, the Baal Kriya, there are all different types of Baal Kriya. Some Baal Kriya, they don't know what they're doing. But some are more precise, less precise. Where does the Shira end? So this is an age-old machlokes between the Rash, I think between the Rambam and the Ramban. I think it's the Rambam and the Ramban, maybe the other Rishonim, everyone gets involved. Where does the Shira end? Now, there are two different signals in the Shira where it ends. The simple understanding is the Shira ends with the words Hashem Yimloich Li'olam Bo'ed. On the other hand, we know that the Shira is written in the form of Oriach Al Gabe Levein. We know what that means. We discussed this week. You know, it's written in a unique way. If the Shira really ends with the words Hashem Yimloich Li'olam Bo'ed, then we should immediately go back to a regular format of writing. But it doesn't. We have now two more psukim. Kivos Ashkashem Yochi Lombo Ed, Kivosus Pyro Berichvo Uvrash Vayom. You know, I just made a very big mistake. That's not what I wanted to say. I got a little bit confused, so everything I just said the last minutes erased from the record. That's not what I really wanted to say. I got confused. Let's go a little bit further in the Shira. A little bit further. After the Shira, after it's completely over, everything is over, and then it says, Vatikach Ankor. Ankor. Vatikach Miriam Hanaviyah Achoysadun Satoif Biodo. Vatitzenachol Hanoshimacharecha Bisufim Bimcholois. Vatanlohem Miriam. Shirulashem Kigo Hoygo. Susrachloi Lamovayam. Okay, we do that. So let's ask the question the other way around. Why isn't this part of the Shira? Everyone agrees that this is not part of the Shira, even though we sing it, but it's not written or the Rabbi Levena. What would have been? What's so terrible to include this also in the Shira? You know, today, Nashim, they rule the world today. What's so terrible that we should include this pasuk in the Shira? My high. So Rashi said something very interesting. Rashi says that Miriam, question, she had the toif. Where did Miriam get, why did Miriam have with her and the women musical instruments? The men did not have musical instruments. Why not? So the men, so the simple understanding way Rashi says is, the men left the musical instruments back in Egypt. They were abandoned. Mm-hmm. You have to be very selective what you take with you when you leave Egypt. They left them in Egypt. They couldn't care less about the music. The women took musical instruments with them, not just Miriam, all of them. Rashi says explicitly, It says here, Esatoif biyado, Avatir biyoyam ha-neviyah. Okay, it goes over here a little further over here. Esatoif. Kli shel mine zemer. Miriam had a toif, a musical instrument. Where'd she get this from? Bisufim uvim chaylois. Why? So Rashi says something very, very powerful. Muftachois hayu tzidkaniyos shebedor. The righteous women in the generation were certain that shehakadosh baruch hu oyseh lohem nisim. Hashem would do for them miracles after they left Egypt. V'hoitzihu hatupim mimitzrayim, and the women only, when they left Egypt, and they had limited space in their suitcase, they took with them musical instruments. What about the men? Nope. The men just took cash. They stuffed their suitcases with dollar bills, and they abandoned the musical instruments. The women left the money behind, and they took the musical instruments. Why? They were certain that Hashem would do miracles for them when they left Egypt, and they wanted to sing Shira, so they had to have them ready. Wait a minute. Why only the women? They just experienced 6 months of continuous Nisim Gluyim. Not just the women, the men. The Makos took place over how long? 6 months or a year?
A year.
I think it's a year. A whole year. Miracle, 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 miracle. Non-stop. Lemala Miderech HaTeva. The 10 Makos. Makos Bechoros. One thing after another. Miracles. And the women, they looked at the miracles. Nashon of Bina Yisera. Bina Yisera. If Hashem did for us miracles for a whole year, Hashem has a lot more in store for us. So therefore, when we go out of this country and we go somewhere, who knows where we're going to go? Hashem's going to take us. We have to thank Hashem. We got to thank Hashem. There's going to be more miracles. We got to be prepared for this. So who cares about the money? Leave the money in Egypt. Where's your appreciation? Stuff your suitcases with musical instruments. That's what's important for the future. We got to prepare for the future to thank Hashem. There's going to be more miracles. The men, it's been a very nice experience here in Egypt. 12 months, incredible miracles. It wasn't even on their mind that Hashem, will he do more miracles? He did enough already. There are no more miracles going to happen. Lo and behold, Hashem did chesed, and there were more miracles. But the men were caught, pardon the expression, with their pants down. They were caught with, they couldn't express themselves properly. They didn't prepare to be able to express themselves.
But most of the shira was said by the men.
With shira, without music. Where's the music? What? In the days Hamikdash, the Levim, when they sing Shira, what do? There are two components to their Shira. They sing with their voice, beautiful melodies, and they have beautiful compositions, and musical instruments. The Shleimus of Shira is the Koyach HaDibur, a beautiful voice, with a beautiful expression, and with music. You ever listen to these videos today? We live in a world of WhatsApp. They send these little videos. When they add music into the video, these little clips, the music, it makes all the difference. It creates a mood. These clips, when they add, they create an ominous moment. They create something happy. The music does sometimes more to the script than the words do. Without, to take away the music, the background music, and you listen to the words, it's total nonsense. You have the music, all of a sudden the words come to life. This is Gachi Darka Shaloylam. The Shira of the men was deficient. Severely deficient. You know why? Where's the music? Oz Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. Oz. This was a Shvach HaMaaseh. You know why? Because they failed miserably to understand, like we learned in the morning, in the Nachshir, Hashem has a consistent pattern of behavior. If this is what He has done for us in the past, this is what's coming in the future. And we're going to have to thank Hashem for the miracles. Prepare now in the future to thank Hashem for what's coming next. The men, unfortunately, failed miserably in this respect. The Noshim had the insight, the Bina Yisera, to appreciate that Hashem has a consistent pattern of behavior and will do for the Jewish people more miracles in the future. And they therefore prepared. And when they left Egypt, Rashi's words are just, they leap off the page. And the words are, again, one more time, they were certain, Shebidor, She HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Oiseh, Lohem, Nisim, will do for them more miracles. It ain't over yet. And therefore, it was they, the Noshim, they didn't give it to the men. Too bad for you guys. You didn't take your own, you're not getting ours. Therefore, V'choytziu Tupim B'mitzrayim. Okay, so that's one idea. But now I want to go say what I told you. You can't really say, but I'm going to say it anyway. And you'll figure it out. And that is, what was the question? Why wasn't what the women did part of the Shira? So I want to say something very wild, which again, you can't really say, but I'm going to say it, very wild. When it says in Pasuk Chof, when the Shira is over, we're going back in time. We're going back in Mukdam Mu'ucha Batorah. Here, it was Kriyas Yamsuf. And here, Klal Yisrael just finished singing to Hashem the most exalted Shira man has ever sung to Hashem. And the Shira is now over. It's over entirely. The blank line, now there's a completely empty space now, a whole empty line. And now we resume the regular, ordinary text. We're now, let's go back, fill in some missing gaps. You do that, right? You do that. You can go back in time when you write things. The Torah says, "Ein mukim mukha." Let's go back and go back to Egypt. Let's go back to the story of the Exodus before the Jewish people left, when they were packing up their bags. Back in Egypt, it was 7 days ago. It was the 15th day of Nisan. They're packing up their matzah, and they're about to leave. And as they're packing, Vatikach Miriam, Hanaviah. Miriam the Navi, Miriam the Navi sees what's going to be in the future. We're going back now 7 days backwards. They're packing their bags. Miriam takes in her bag or suitcase. She takes with her Hanaviah, Achlei Siron, Esatoif, Biyoda. She puts this in her suitcase. And before they leave, she says, you know why I'm taking this? It ain't over yet. There are going to be more miracles. Oh, let's also take and pack up in our suitcase some musical instruments. There's not enough room for the musical instruments and the jewelry, so throw the jewelry in the garbage. Who cares? And as they were packing, they already sang the Shira in advance. They knew what was coming. And they sang in Egypt on day 15, Vatan Lahem Miriam. She sang Lohem, B'loshen Zohar. Everyone asked the famous one, why Lohem? Lohem. There are only 100 answers. But she was telling the men also, you guys, you're totally missing the boat. Look what I'm putting in my suitcase. And look what you're putting in your suitcase. I'm putting in my suitcase musical instruments. You're putting in your suitcase cash. She said, you guys are making a big mistake. There's more to come. This ain't over yet. And when they were leaving Egypt, she said to Lohem, to the men, Shiru LaHashem. Ki go'oi go'o, sus v'roich v'roma v'ayla. She's a Nevi'ah. Miriam ha-Nevi'ah. It introduces Miriam here as the how do you say it in Russian? The prophetess? Prophetess. There's more coming, guys. I'm a Nevi'ah. There's going to be a Kriyas Yamsuf. We're going to sing to Hashem. We need some musical instruments. Why don't you take some with you and forget about the money? That's what I'm doing. That's what the women are doing. Vatan Lohim to the men, Miriam. She spoke to them as a Nevi'ah. It ain't over yet. We're going to sing one day, "Vashiru laHashem ki goyo goa sus v'roch v'orom avayyam." This happened back in Egypt. We're going back in time. It's not part of the Shira, because the Shira didn't happen yet. This is a Nevuah, what's going to be? It's not part of the Shira. She was giving Musa to the men. Okay, Rabbi Isai, time is up. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you for coming and listening. Enjoy your Shabbos. Thank you.